Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I am playing an interview I did with multi-talented Corey Brenish. I thought when I interviewed Corey that I was interviewing simply a producer, at that time, part producer of Bonnie and Clyde the musical. But it turns out I was interviewing a man of many talents and many parts, only one of which is producing. So you can learn a lot about a lot of things from Corey Brenish. And remarkably, although I didn't realize it, I even got some more information on directing. If you've been listening to the show, you know I've been interviewing directors almost exclusively for weeks and weeks now, talking about direction. And although I didn't expect to get that from Corey, I did. So lots and lots of interesting information from a really interesting man. Hang on, here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show, to quote an old U.S. Army ad, is all about being all that you can be. I say over and over again that I believe that we come out of childhood with a limited version of who we are. It's not inaccurate, it's just not complete. And in some ways, I suppose it is inaccurate if we believe that we are not something that we actually are. That would be an incomplete and also inaccurate version of who we are. And that inaccuracy, that limitedness, keeps us from being all that we can be, from doing all that we can do. I quite often speak of this in my work as a psychotherapist as wounds that are inflicted upon us as children and which are still there when we come into adulthood. These wounds are not necessarily inflicted intentionally. Quite often, they're inadvertent. Parents who were not allowed to be assertive will quite often discourage a child from being assertive, or the other way around. They will encourage a child to be over assertive, never accepting what is said to them and simply going with it. This isn't intentional. It's, to use a psychotherapeutic term, unconscious. It's a reflex. They can't help it. But even though they don't mean to do it and they can't help it and they are not trying to discourage or limit a child, children get discouraged and limited. I talk a lot about this in my shows. I wrote a book about it called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want and What to Do About It. You can find more about that and about me and access to all of my past shows on my website, thelynshow.com, THELYNNE, don't leave the E out of Lynn, SHOW, thelynshow.com. But if you've been listening, you know the other thing I do is interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do this because it's so hard to do that in our culture, that the people who do it are people who, at least in the area of their work, are all that they can be. They are themselves. What you hear is what you get. And today, I'm playing an interview with an extraordinary individual. I interviewed Corey Brenish because he was one of the producers of Bonnie and Clyde the musical. And again, if you have been listening for any length of time, you know that I interviewed, well, virtually everyone in the creative team and the stars of Bonnie and Clyde the musical. And Corey was the only producer that I interviewed. And I thought I was interviewing simply a producer, a person who produces for the theater. I was surprised, delighted, elated, amazed by my interview with Corey. Because first of all, he is, as he says, a working actor, a singer, a writer, a director, and a producer. So that in itself is pretty remarkable. There is not an art that Corey has given his life to, but virtually every art, well, maybe the art is theater. Well, no, because he doesn't only sing in the theater. I have CDs of his and will be playing throughout this show cuts from the CD, so you will have access to Corey the singer anyway. But the other thing that is remarkable and wonderful and amazing to me about this particular interview is that Corey talks about something that I don't think I've ever heard anyone else say. And that is that he believes that he was able to access all of these skills because he was acting against discouragement. That he was actively discouraged, both by a member of his family and in school. He was told he was tone deaf. And he was, again to quote Corey, devastated, told not to sing. You'll hear that I tell a story from my own life about my sister's, what I consider to be my sister's tone deafness and what I did about that. But his natural resistance to discouragement, to the wounds that had been inflicted upon him, caused him to create a Corey, to do what he was told he could not do, to be what he was told he wasn't. This extraordinary, I don't know, modeling, demonstration of what is possible is so inspiring to me, and I hope to you, because it is the message of The Lynn Show, that there are things about you that you may not know, which others may tell you you don't have or shouldn't be, but they are there. And you can find them, you can access them, you can use them. As Corey says, he only talks about this one thing, about doing the lead in a musical with the Oregon Symphony of I've forgotten how many pieces, getting a standing ovation, and he says, so I guess it worked out. It was not just that it worked out. It was that Corey determined to be all that he could be. And so he is. I interviewed Corey on the night of the last dress rehearsal before the first preview performance of Bonnie and Clyde the musical. And I interviewed him in the theater. And you will hear that at the beginning of the interview, first of all, there's a lot of noise from people wandering around. And secondly, we are talking about the fact that the preview will begin tomorrow and how exciting and thrilling it is and how disappointing it must have been for the dreadful and, I think, unkind and unnecessary and personal criticism that they got from some of the critics. The show is wonderful. And Corey produced the cast album CD for Bonnie and Clyde the musical. And on its first day in the world, it was the number one pick on Amazon. So the cast album continues to demonstrate that the score is wonderful, whatever some of the critics may have said about it. And it may be traveling, so if it's coming to your neighborhood, be sure to run out and see it. It's really wonderful. My only regret for you is that you won't get to see Laura Osnes and Jeremy Jordan in it, who were amazing. And I think I may play one of the songs from Bonnie and Clyde the musical. It won't be from the cast album, but you'll get a taste for the extraordinary music and the extraordinary voices of Jeremy and Laura. Okay, I want to tell you that currently Corey is in a show in his hometown of Portland, Oregon, a show called Morocco. He will be assisting on Broadway, the show Peter and the Starcatcher. He's somehow involved in Evita. This summer he'll be back in Portland in a show called November. And he sang at the Copacabana on New Year's Eve of 2011. In addition to the skills, the talent, the dedication, the energy, the passion of the amazing Corey Brunish, he is a gentle, kind, sweet, funny, generous man. And you'll hear all of that as you listen to Corey Brunish. But right before I play my interview with Corey, I'm going to play a song from one of his CDs, CD called Better Days. On the jacket, there are 8 other CDs listed. So if you find yourself interested in Corey, let me know. Go up on my website and I will let you know how to find more of them or find out where Corey is doing some of his performing. Anyway, I'm going to play a song called When It Rains, which according to this jacket was written by, I assume, a friend of Corey's named Richard Moore, who also sings the falsetto part on the bridge for this song. It's a very sweet song, and you get a sense of Corey, I think, from listening to him sing this, which a song which he clearly loves and does with that love. So I'm going to play When It Rains by Richard Moore, sung by Corey Brunish, and then I'm going to play the interview with Corey.
I wasn't sure when I left here the last time I'd ever return. The road out ahead was all I needed. Let the bridges burn. Oh, the springtime in Paris was perfect. Then Spain till the summer's end. I was happy to stay till the skies turned to gray. And then when it rained and the sky was full of tears when it rained, days away turned into years. And if nothing else is true, no matter what you do, the consequence of time remains the same. But if it does, it doesn't matter. When it rains, all I had was a backpack and six string and the odd torture metaphor. Every morning I'd rise to exotic surprises from the night before. I was fine for a while on the highway. Life was just what it was. Like stones in my pack, something beckoned me back to you. When it rains, I hear music trees, sad refrains of a million melodies. And with nowhere else to go, all I wanna know, does the consequence of time remain the same? And if it does, it doesn't matter when it rains. The seasons interchange. If it does, it doesn't matter when it rains.
So I am here in the bowels of the theater with Corey Brunish, and he is, among other things, one of the producers of Bonnie and Clyde the musical, actually. But in addition to his role as producer in this context, Corey is a lot of things. And I don't remember if I told you, but what I do is I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And if I remember correctly, you have made both your living and your life with a number of arts.
It's true.
Yes.
It's true.
And typically, people are an art. They're a musician, they're an actor, they're a sculptor, you know? So I get to ask, the question that I ask always is, how did it get started? How did you find it? So for you, I suppose what I want to know is, which was the first art that captured you, and do you remember the very beginning? Did somebody say, oh, you're so clever, and you thought maybe I'd be an actor, or that's a wonderful poem, or you've got a great voice, so do you know what I mean?
I do, and I think that often artists pursue their art because they were discouraged.
Ah!
And so they're sort of they're sort of pushing back against that discouragement. And
I'm going to move this, and the reason I'm going to move this is because I think we're going to pick up that noise from upstairs, whatever we do. So I want to get as much of you as possible.
Yes. Well, it's thrilling because we are in the basement of the Schoenfeld, which was formerly the Palace Theater here on 45th on Broadway. And it's thrilling because in a mere 6 hours, we're going to have our very first audience. And we're very excited. And you can probably hear in the background they're doing a music rehearsal right now. It's our last rehearsal before we have an audience. So we're absolutely thrilled. This is a great moment and we can't wait. But as far as the artist choosing their art, not because they were encouraged, but because they're pushing back against somebody who is not encouraging them.
I love this.
Who is resisting their attempts at their art. I think it's true for a lot of artists. They're trying to get it right. They're trying to overcome some discouragement or some disappointment early in their life. And I know that among my disciplines, I'm a working actor, a singer, a writer, a director, and a producer. And I know that when I was young, I was tone deaf.
Were you?
And, you know, fast forward 30 years later, I'm singing the lead in a musical with the Oregon Symphony, which is 60 players in front of an audience of 3,000 people to a standing ovation. So you might say that you know, things worked out.
Wait, you know, I want to stop you because when I was a kid, I was in chorus, and I was the alto, right? And, you know, you learn the alto part. The alto part is sort of boring unless there's, you know, the soprano or the tenor or something to sing against. So I wanted my sister to sing that. She was my little sister, right? Well, she was tone deaf. And I believe that I cured her of tone deafness. And I've never heard anyone else say that that could be done. I mean, I sat at the piano with her and played notes and made her sing. I'm amazed. So how did you do it?
Well, just practice. And I do know of one other person in my life who overcame it. And yeah, just through perseverance and practice and muscle memory, and you finally, it's not a natural thing for some people.
But it's not irrevocable,
right,
irrevocable,
so, yeah.
Right? I really want to make that point because I'm sure that you and I and that other person and my sister are the only people who know, you know?
Yeah, it's probably not very common because people get so discouraged, you know, psychologically. And
yeah, teachers say, you don't sing, just move your mouth, right?
They're sort of excluded and shunned. And so I think, you know, and it's probably true for all the disciplines. You can probably learn how to dance if you think you have two left feet, and learn how to act if you think you can't or you've been told you can't. So that's kind of been my journey.
So wait, I'm really curious now. Did somebody tell you were tone deaf?
Yeah, they said you can't sing.
And do you remember, how old were you?
I was probably 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember the feeling, well, who says, or do you remember the discouragement? Do you remember?
Well, it was devastating, of course. And, you know, they were reacting due to their own psychological pathology. So, you know, they weren't trying to be mean, but it was something that they were obviously willing to do at the time.
Yes. And who are the they?
Well, there was actually a member of my family.
Ah.
Yeah. And then I did have some trouble later on. I was actually in a school play and was not able to match the pitch.
Uh-huh.
I was singing in thirds.
Ah, spontaneously singing in
thirds.
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah, and unfortunately I was not nurtured in this ability that I had. I was, you know, it was...
No, that would have been great.
It was considered a negative. It was rejected. And so you have to recover from all these wounds.
Yes.
And it's a journey, you know, it's a journey. And so we go on and we work hard and we try to rise above.
And we did.
Yes, and so in a way, you know, you owe thanks to that person.
Yes.
Inadvertently, who spurred you on.
Yeah, they could have done it a different way.
Well,
but all
sure.
Right, never mind.
Sure they could have.
Yeah.
But,
right.
You know, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Right.
There's a lot of things in life that...
So the very first art that you worked at was singing?
Yes, and I also became a musician. Trumpet was my instrument, and then, you know, acting followed cheek by jowl on that, and And so, you know, I studied acting, directing, and writing in college, and we used to do repertory in a Greek bowl in Los Angeles, and we would do 6 shows in repertory, and so in 2 months' time, you would rehearse and perform 6 shows.
Wow.
And you'd do a different show every night.
Wow.
And generally, if you were an active member of the company, you would have 2 leads, 2 supporting parts, and 2 chorus parts.
Now, was this in school, or this was...
Yeah, it's called Occidental College. Obama went there for a couple years. I lasted longer than he did. I actually graduated. But yeah, and so you're getting this tremendous experience, and certainly your ego is in check because you're in the chorus one night.
And you're playing a principal the next, and right. So but there's no better training than this.
No better training.
And so... You're a dedicated, hardworking, diligent workaholic.
A little bit.
Yes. Yes.
There's a little bit of that.
And it's done really well by you.
I've been lucky. Certainly timing and hard work and a little bit of luck. Yeah. It's gone well.
Well, what's the luck part?
I happened to get into real estate just before it exploded in Portland, Oregon. And so that worked out well for me, and I've been able to put a lot of money back into the arts.
That's lovely. God, that is so lovely. Okay, so are you working as an actor or performer at the moment? I know you're working as a producer.
Right. I just came off of 2 shows back-to-back just before I came into this one with nary a day between any of the 3 projects. Literally, I came off stage in Portland, playing a part in Oklahoma, got on the plane, went immediately into rehearsal for Guys and Dolls. That closed. The next day I arrived to first rehearsal of Bonnie and Clyde.
Wow. It's a very busy life.
It is a busy life.
What were you in Guys and Dolls?
I played Skye.
Did you? I'll bet you did. of course.
It's my 3rd time.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a great role.
It is.
Yeah.
Great show.
There's a lot of good... A lot of good songs, although Skye doesn't have my favorite songs in Guys and Dolls, but never mind. okay, so do you have a favorite of these things? I mean, you can do them all, so...
Well, I think I'm a better actor than I'm a singer, and I think that I'm a better director than either of those. I think directing is really my calling, but it's been... And of course, I enjoy producing as well, but it's been an interesting journey... And this is not a slam on any director out there, but a director who's a career director, after they've sort of become that, does not get the chance to observe any other directors because they're the only director in the room. An actor who does 100 shows observes 100 directors. And by the time you've done 100 shows, you pretty well know what works and what doesn't work, how you wish to be treated, how you don't wish to be treated. And so the best training ground in the world for a director, if that's your inclination, is to be an actor.
Oh, I'm sure that's right.
Because you have to understand the psychology of the actor, along with the psychology of the audience, and who has more contact with the audience than the actor. The director directs the show and leaves. The actor is there every night. So the psychology of the actor. You have to have a point of view. You have to have something in mind that you want to convey with the script that you're interpreting. And then you have to understand stagecraft. You have to understand how lights work and how the set functions and how to utilize these physical aspects of this box that you're performing in. Film is a very different métier, isn't it? Because you can go anywhere in the world and anywhere in time. And you can do it instantly.
Right.
But stage, you're in a box.
Yeah, you're limited.
You're in a box with the audience. And so whatever you do happens in front of them. And with some magic, you can do some sleight of hand and with set changes and lights and things. But really, it's a very confined space. And I like that about it. Because of the fact that it's limited, you really have to work hard to overcome those limitations.
Well, and the other thing I'm thinking while you're talking is pretty much what you said, that the actor has a tactile sense of what it feels like to be on that stage that the director may not have because they're not there.
You have to nurture your actor, and if you don't relate to the fact that they have the hardest job because they're on the stage and you're sitting in the audience, you will not get the best performance out of your actor. The minute you belittle or criticize an actor, you've lost them. And even if they wanted to, they could not do their best work for you at that point because their instrument closes down because they're afraid.
Right.
And so if you're not coming from the standpoint of love, you've lost the game.
Oh, I know this is true. I know this is true. And I also know that what you're saying about knowing it from being an actor is so right because no one can tell you what that feels like, even if they try. You know?
That's absolutely 100% true. You have to stand in those shoes. You have to stand in the wings. You have to understand the insecurity and the fear that comes there and the false bravado. You have to understand all those levels
yes.
of what the actor is going through so that you can reach them.
And to know that the only way an actor can really be successful is to be completely open and vulnerable. And how can they be if they don't feel safe?
Completely open. That's exactly right.
Right.
Meryl Streep says that very same thing.
Yeah. Well, you know it when you see it.
Yes.
You know it when you see it. Right. You, as an audience, you know it when you see it, and of course, as an actor, you can't. There's no facsimile for that. There's no way to pretend to be open, no matter how badly you want it.
That's right. You can't fake it.
No, you can't fake it. That's exactly right. That's great. That's great. And I think you're exactly right. And it's interesting because you would think that this wouldn't be rocket science. You would think that directors would know that, or people who teach directors would know that, and I'm sure they don't.
And they don't. And for so many years, we've come from the point of view that the director is a dictator and a disciplinarian. And because we come up through the scholastic system in many ways, they are a disciplinarian. And those lines get crossed and it's not right, and it's not right at all. I mean, I have literally heard directors today, coming on the scene today, say, my cast must fear me.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. And what could be a more arcane point of view than
that?
Well,
what can be a more absurd?
Absurd,
and
absolutely.
Counterproductive and, oh God.
The most important thing to me besides serving the script and serving the audience and nurturing my actors is that everybody have a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done that, you've failed as an artist.
No, I know that's true. And you know, therapists who have not been in therapy are not any good.
Absolutely not.
Because you have to, it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
Well, but people don't do it. Yeah. In the same way that directors don't do it. You have to know what that feels like on the other side. That's right.
From
that's
whence
right.
you come, yes.
That's right, that's right, that's right. Okay, so this is not the first show you've produced or been part of in a production capacity, or it is?
I've produced several shows in Portland. One for the Cuckoo's Nest, Company, Sondheim's show, mm-hmm. wonderful. And then I did a brand new original musical called The Ghosts of Celilo, which is, as far as I know, the first Native American musical. And we're looking at doing it regionally and maybe someday reaching Broadway with it. But curiously, it was written by a gentleman who had a hit song in the 80s, sold a couple million copies, called Harden My Heart. But what's odd about that is Harden My Heart is currently on Broadway in the hit Rock of Ages.
Wow.
And so 20 years ago, 30 years ago, he wrote this song, and he's still living off of it. and now he's got this new musical out. But I was also an investor in Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, my God.
And just passing through the room right now is John McDaniel, who is the music director on that show. and he's the music director on Bonnie and Clyde, of course, which opens December 1st on Broadway.
Yes, hurry on down.
We have previews opening November 4th, and we hope to see you there. And so I was an investor on Catch Me If You Can, but Bonnie and Clyde is my Broadway debut as a big-time producer.
Oh, it's wonderful. I know. I talked to Ivan earlier, and he, too, this is his... You know,
His big debut. Although he did do some rewrites on Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah, but that's not the same.
No,
it's not the same. Everybody is, you can feel it in the air here.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
It's wonderful. Okay, so the other question that I always ask is, having spent a life, and you have spent a life, pursuing a variety of the arts.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you would want to say about it? About what it's like, what a philosophical position, anything.
Well, you don't do it for money.
Yeah.
You do it because you have to, and you love it, and for whatever reason. And I think it's important to remember that in this journey, the ultimate goal should be to grow as a person. You know, it's a peripheral benefit. If you're not growing as a person, you're not going to grow as an artist. And they should be hand in hand. One should nurture the other.
They're not separate.
They're not. And I think for many people, they end up being that way, and that's too bad.
What do you mean?
Well, if you don't grow as a person, you can't grow as an artist.
Ah.
You're just sort of stuck in that odd, childlike phase of wanting attention.
Watch me.
Yes. Well, that's what Laurence Olivier said acting boiled down to. He said, it boils down to two words. Watch me. So he understood that it's...
Mommy.
It's this basic, very childlike pursuit and very vulnerable position to place yourself in. And so, and this is not a put down of actors because I am one, but the actor is a child and the director is the parent. And so I think, you know, graduating to that position is probably a good idea for all actors. I think
graduate to
directing.
Oh, and it's like growing up.
Yes, and they should definitely try it once because they will understand how hard that dynamic is.
Yes, it's the same thing.
It's the same. They need to understand the pressures that the director is under and that he has his eye on the big picture. And I think they might learn to be.
And it's not just about you.
It's not just about you. That's exactly right.
I think that we have probably
outstayed our welcome here.
Exactly. We've gotten as much quiet as we're going to get. So thank you so much, Corey. This was great.
A pleasure.
This was really great.
So you heard Corey say that dedicating one's life to an art, you don't do it for the money. You do it because you have to. You do it because it is who you are. You do it to grow as a person. And of course, these are words that warm my heart, because I believe that that is what we are all yearning for, aiming at, trying to become, the person that we are, to grow into the person that we are, to do what we do because we have to do it, because it is us. I don't ever mean to suggest that this is about an activity or a career or a talent. This can be about being the as smart as you are, regardless of the fact that people teased you about being a smartass, or as sensitive as you are, even though a parent called you a crybaby and humiliated you, or being as quiet as you want to be, even though you were chastised in school for not speaking up. Whatever it was that you were discouraged from being, are you really it? Can you reclaim it? Can you even simply recognize that it is you? Remembering Corey's inspiring, really, discussion of how they told him he couldn't, but he believed that he could. And so he flew in the face of it, and he made a life of these things that he was told he could not be or do. So I'm really hoping that you heard that and will take that to heart and ask yourself, is there something I have always wished I was or could do that I had the impression or was told that I couldn't or I shouldn't? You don't have to actually do it now. Just the recognition is a very, very important step. Okay. As I have said any number of times, all this information is in my book, When You Can, You Will. A lot of this information is in previous shows. So if you go up on my website, you can click on some of the shows, listen to me talking about some of this, how you discover the things that you have hidden, what's undercover, how you might go about recovering some of it, the obstacles to recovering some of it. If you have questions, you can click on email me and ask me your questions. But right now, I'm going to play another song from Corey's album, and then I'm going to play a song from Bonnie and Clyde that actually is from the cast album. My IT guy, who I will talk about later, found a way to download one of the songs from the album that Corey produced, and I'm going to play one of those. But first, I'm going to play another song from Corey's CD. This is his version of James Taylor's wonderful You've Got a Friend.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, nothing, oh nothing is going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Now winter, spring, summer, or fall, oh, all you've got to do, and I'll be there, yes I will. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind should begin to blow, just keep your head together and call my name out loud, and soon you'll hear me knocking on your door. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, now all you've got to do, and I'll be there, yes I will. Ain't it good to know that you've got a friend, when people can be so cold, 'cause they'll hurt you and desert you and take your soul if you let them go. So don't you let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you've got to do is call, and I'll be there, yes I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend. You've got a friend.
It's lovely, isn't it? Well, I'm going to do one more cut from Corey's album. This is a change of pace. I've done two sweet songs, which I think really represent the guy Corey is. But just so that you know that he's got a hard edge as well, I'm going to play the cut, That's Life, and here it is.
That's what all the people say. Riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that too. When I'm back on top in June. I said,
that's life,
and as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks just by stomping on a G. But I won't let it get me down. 'Cause this final word, it keeps spinning round. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. Well, I've been up, I've been down. Myself laying flat on my face. Well, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life, and I can't deny it. Many times I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. But if I didn't think it was worth one single try, well, I'd get right on a big bird, and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. Hell, I've been up, I've been down, I've been over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, well, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life, and I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. But if there's nothing shaking come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball.
So again, if there's anything that this show demonstrates, this particular individual show of mine, not the Lynn Show necessarily, it is that we human beings are not simple. I like to quote my favorite poet, it's Walt Whitman. I believe this is a song of myself. He says, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then. I contradict myself. I'm large. I contain multitudes." I believe that absolutely. And although we contain multitudes, what I see mostly is people trying to downplay their multitude, simplify themselves. I remember once I got a call from a client, and she was beside herself with distress because she felt angry and happy. And she wanted to know if it was possible to feel angry and happy at the same time. I like to say to people in that situation that whatever you are, that's normal. You can't be something that the rest of us are not. You cannot be an anomaly to the human condition. So here we have Corey, who is discouraged and told that he is not. And he not only is, but he's more things. And some of these things may be contradictory. He talks about his role as an actor being that of a child, his role as a director being that of the parent. And yet, he goes back and forth between them. He's capable of being child to the director parent and parent to the actor child. He's not simple. He's not static. And neither are you. So, have you wondered what else you might be other than what you have been? What they told you you were? What you have come to believe you are? I talk about this a lot in the book. I call it our cover story. That version of ourselves that we present to the world, which, although it's quite often true, it's almost never the whole story. And we keep the rest of the story undercover, waiting to be exposed, to be discovered, to be accessed, to be used. So this is the point of the Lynn Show, and everyone I interview makes this point in one way or another. Not everybody quite so dramatically as Corey, but everybody is someone who found inside of themselves the thing that speaks for them and demonstrates it with their life. Okay, it's time for me to thank the multi-talented Josh Hackney. You should all have a Josh Hackney. You should all have the Josh Hackney. And you can get access to him by going up on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, and saying, I need Josh, and I will get him for you. And of course, you can, as I said before, ask me questions, get a hold of the book, listen to the other shows. As always, I hope you got something you could use from this show. Something about the way Corey lives his life, or even just the enjoyment of listening to him perform. Something that's going to bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And as always, I hope you will be too. And we're going to go out on a cut from the cast album of Bonnie and Clyde the musical. This is Jeremy Jordan and Laura Osnes singing This World Will Remember Us, produced by Corey Brunish.
Well, who would have thought that a waitress from Rowena would have had the balls to bust me out with my old 45. And who would have thought that a farm boy from Toledo could outsmart the smartest lawman and walk out of here alive? My name is gonna make the history books. Too bad I won't be here. I may have started out with small-time crooks. In a year or two, I'll be as known as Chicago's Al Capone.
Bye, baby.
See you soon, sugar. Thanks to you, Bonnie, babe, I can make plans again. I got lots of reasons to keep living. It's true that love can set you free, and this world will remember me.
You said you'd go straight, Clyde, I want
Hollywood, one or two jobs should do.
But after that, we will be done for good.
Babe, when Hollywood gets hold of you, they'll be saying, Clara, who? No need to rush, everybody gets our autographs. Hell of a ride, I'll be the words on our epitaph.
But it ain't over yet, 'cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang.
But it needed to be downloaded from something, and I don't know how to do that. And so that's just one of the many, many things. That's just one of the many, many things that Josh does for me. He found the program I am currently using to record this and to edit. He taught me how to record and how to edit. He taught me how to upload music the way I uploaded the songs from Corey's CD. And when I forget the things that he taught me, he reteaches me. And those things which my mind simply will not hold on to, he does for me. He built the computer that I am recording this in and is still teaching me how to do the things that weren't in the old one.